Wing TV, with Victor Thorne and Lisa Giuliani. The revolution is being televised.
Hello, it's Wednesday, February 9th, and you're watching Wing TV. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing TV. We had one of the most exciting days ever on Wing TV yesterday. We started off with an interview with Daryl Smith, the French Connection, on RBN. Then we did our show with Lawrence Patterson. Then last night, we did a show, an interview, on Wisconsin Public Radio with
Duke Skolrich and Patty McNulty. It's www.kuws.fm 91.3.
Right, and we're scheduled to do this show from 6 to 7, but there were so many phones. They said they had 6 phone lines there, and every one of the banks was lit up for over an hour, so they kept us on for almost a half an hour after we were scheduled to be on, just call after call, and people, you know, just saying, thank God this information is finally getting out there. And actually, our guest today, David Ray Griffin, his name was mentioned by 2 different callers. So the word is getting out, folks, and we just thank everyone that tuned into that. It was one of the most exciting interviews we ever did. Also, we were informed that somebody called into Coast to Coast last night with George Norrie and mentioned Wing TV and said that they should have us on that show. So the word is spreading to them. And finally, we got a call from John Kaminsky last night, and he said he's going to join us out in Oklahoma City on April 19th. For the Oklahoma 10th anniversary commemoration. So everybody out there, we hope you can journey. We're going to drive all the way from Pennsylvania, so mark that on your calendar, and hopefully you can make it and show your support for this cause. Now, as I mentioned, today's guest is Mr. David Ray Griffin. We've interviewed him once before. He's also contained on our CDs here, the Wing TV collection. Mm-hmm. And he's the author of 2 books, The New Pearl Harbor, and also the recently released The 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions. And I dove into this book a few weeks ago, and it's amazing. So, David, welcome to Wing TV.
Hi, David.
Hi, it's good to be back with you.
Yeah. And before we start, David, I just want to say that one of these days, somewhere along the line, I want to meet you, I want to shake your hand for what you did in this book, because this was a whitewash from the start, mm-hmm. and you were the one that dove into this book and just revealed what was truly going on with this commission, and you have to be commemorated for your efforts.
So, well, thank you. I'm glad for your show. That'll help more people learn about it.
Right. Now, to start things off, the Warren Report was described by somebody once as the greatest miscarriage of justice ever foisted upon the American people. But after reading your book, I think that the 9/11 Whitewash Committee surpassed that. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
Yes, it proves there is progress.
In your book, you say that World Trade Center 1, 2, and 7 all shared 10 characteristics of controlled demolition. Can you go over that a little bit with us?
Well, I probably don't want to go through all 10 of them, but
the
main point is that there are these rather well-known characteristics of controlled demolitions. For
uh-huh.
example, the buildings fall straight down into their own footprint. Most dramatically, they fall very fast, almost at free fall speed. The 9/11 Commission even mentioned that the South Tower collapsed in 10 seconds. That's very fast for such a huge building. But they showed no curiosity as to how fire-bending steel could have brought down the building in 10 seconds.
Right.
Some of the other characteristics, the enormous dust storms, clouds that you can see in the picture, say in Eric Hufschmidt's book or on the web, projected out horizontally from the building, maybe 200 feet or more, and almost all of the concrete, that's what the dust clouds are, pulverized into very tiny bits of dust. And so you have those and seven other characteristics, and the 9/11 Commission just ignored all of that.
Yeah. Well, before I get to my next question, tell everyone how they can find your books, The New Pearl Harbor and also the one on the 9/11 Commission.
Yes, well, it's published by Interlink Books, but one can go to www.interlinkbooks.com.
Okay.
Or you can go on Amazon. They've got it at quite a reduced price.
Okay.
And you can can, even on Amazon, you can get the two books as a package. And then many bookstores, I know Borders carries it, and many local bookstores carry it.
All right, very good. And these books definitely should be in everybody's collection out there. Now, when we go into this 9/11 commission, probably the most important member wasn't even on the commission itself. That's a guy named Philip Zelikow. And you point out that he was the one who established the areas of investigation. He's the one who established the briefing materials, the topics, the witnesses, the line of questioning, and essentially he's the one who sent the agenda. And also, to show just what type of person he is, when asked if there were any unreleased photographs from the Pentagon, he said no. He lied through his teeth about it. So tell everybody who Philip Zelikow is.
Well, this is most important. And in fact, I sort of have the subtitle of the book, The Cain Zelikow Report.
Right.
Because normally we name commissions after their chair, such as the Warren Commission.
Right.
And so many people refer to this as the Cain Commission, but Cain is not the one who called the shots for the most part. Zelikow, as the executive director, ran the staff, this staff of 70-some people. They did all the work. The commissioners you saw on TV just took the results of what they had done. Well, that meant that Zelikow could determine which questions would be pursued and which ones weren't.
So he was the gatekeeper.
All the evidence that suggests official complicity, virtually all of that is simply ignored, and that's why the subtitle is Omissions and Distortions.
Uh-huh.
The word distortions points to the fact that the few things they did deal with that looked like to many people they pointed to official complicity or at least foreknowledge, and they took those facts and distorted them. Zelikow had been a member of the Bush 1 administration, during which he and Condoleezza Rice worked together on the National Security Council. Then when they were out of office during the Clinton years, they wrote a book together. So they're very close. Then when she was named National Security Advisor for the Bush 2 administration, she brought him on to help with the transition.
Uh-huh.
And then he was appointed to Bush 2's Foreign Advisory Board. So he's essentially a member of the Bush White House. So if Dick Cheney had been put in charge of the 9/11 Commission, everybody would have said, hey, there's a conflict of interest there. Well, Zelikow was no different from Cheney in that respect.
So much for independence, huh?
The 9/11 Commission actually had copies of your book while they were doing their work,
sure.
Yet, and you list in your book the hijackers that are, still alive. And they don't mention this at all. How did they react to your information and whatever came of that?
Yeah, we do know that they had copies. One friend of mine actually flew a dozen copies back, put them in Lee Hamilton's office, gave them to his secretary and said, these are for the members. Other people told me they had sent copies to the members. So they had them. And so all of this information was available. One thing that is very deceptive about the report, if you look in the back, you see those dozens of pages of notes in very tiny print at the end. So you say, gee, what a scholarly work. Well, the first rule of scholarship, which Zelikow, who had the PhD in history, knows, is you do a review of the previous literature on the subject.
Uh-huh.
They do not mention a single book, whether my book or Ahmed's book or Chosadovsky's or Terry Mason. They simply ignore all the previous literature about 9/11 that was written from a critical point of view.
Oh, very interesting. Now, Lisa mentioned this briefly, but last night when we were doing this radio show on Wisconsin Public Radio, we mentioned that at least six of the quote-unquote hijackers are still alive. And in your book, you say that these men have been identified, photographed, they've been interviewed, and the hosts of this show were blown away that mm-hmm. this information hasn't surfaced yet in the mainstream. Why hasn't it, David?
It is amazing. And when I first grabbed a copy of the report the day after it came out, this was the thing that struck me. On the very first page, they begin talking about these hijackers. And then later in the book, they show all of their pictures.
Mm-hmm.
They, in fact, go into great detail about their lives, in some case their lovers. So there's no question of mistaken identity. They're identifying the 19 official hijackers. And yet, as you say, at least six of them have shown up alive after 9/11. Some of them have been interviewed by British newspapers. The BBC has reported this. One of the fellows walked into an American embassy. So there's no
there's no
reason for ignorance about this, but the 9/11 Commission didn't even mention the fact that there's all this all these problems with the identity.
Since there's so many problems with this hijacker thing, how do we know there were any hijackers?
We do not have any evidence that any of the 19 people named were on any of the flights. We do not even really know, as you indicate there, what happened on the flights. If actually they were taken over by remote control devices, there was no need for hijackers. So
right.
It's all a big mystery. I don't try to figure out what really happened because... you know, we just don't have the sources. I content myself with focusing on the fact that the official story simply cannot be true and that the 9/11 Commission report did not deal with virtually any of the evidence pointing in that direction.
But the Kings-Ellicott Committee, or Commission, their basic premise is that they accept the government's official version of events and proceed forward like that. Yet, you point out that in July of 2001, only 2 months before 9/11, Osama bin Laden was treated by an American surgeon. Now, there's been a lot of rumors about this and so forth, and people say, oh, it's all a conspiracy theory. But you actually name the surgeon who met with him, Dr. Terry Calloway. You also mentioned by name the CIA agent who visited with him, Larry Mitchell. So this goes far beyond conspiracy theory, doesn't it?
Well, that's right. And the commission had money, it had subpoena power. It could have called this doctor, it could have called this CIA agent before it and gotten sworn testimony, but they do not even, you know, many people say, well, that's surely not true, that bin Laden was treated in the American hospital in Dubai in July of 2001. This Swiss guy that reported the story, even though he has a good reputation, he must have made a mistake. But if the commission thought the story was false, why didn't they
disprove it? Right.
Discredit it, but instead they simply don't mention it, which makes you think they know they can't discredit it.
This 9/11 Commission contradicted Dick Cheney's timeline, and they actually contradicted Norm Mineta's testimony about where Dick Cheney was, didn't they?
Well, Lisa, I'm glad you picked this up, because this is, you know, when people say, what's the most outrageous thing in the book, it's hard to say, but this is certainly a candidate. It had been reported in the news since 9/11 itself that Cheney was hustled down to the underground bunker under the White House shortly after the attacks on the World Trade Center. Cheney himself tells this story. Many news reports say he went down there by 9:10 or 9:15. And against all enemies, it's reported that he was down there and giving orders by 9:15. And as you say, Norman Mineta, the Secretary of Transportation, testified in open session to the commission that he went down at 9:20. He arrived by 9:20, and Cheney was already there and fully in charge.
Mm-hmm.
The 9/11 commission says, oh no, Cheney didn't actually go down and get in the room until almost 10 o'clock. Now, why is that important? Well, previously we had been told the shoot-down order had been given at about 9:45, plenty of time, in other words, to shoot down Flight 93.
Mm-hmm.
There's an enormous amount of evidence that Flight 93 was shot down in Pennsylvania. Well, besides the fact that the commission does not deal with any of that evidence, it then moves Cheney down there so late that they say there couldn't have possibly been a shoot-down order. He didn't give the order till 10 after 10, they claim, and the flight crashed at either
Exactly. Now, a lot of people know the names Richard Pearl, Paul Wolfowitz, Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, Louis Libby. They're all members of the PNAC, the Project for the New American Century. Yet, you point out in this book that that organization was not even mentioned once in the entire 567-page report. Is this a complete whitewash or what?
Well, this shows the perfect example of the selectivity of the commission, starting with their premise that the attacks were carried out entirely by Osama bin Laden's al-Qaeda organization. They go into great detail about the history of al-Qaeda and every threat that they could find where some Osama or some other member of al-Qaeda made a threat against the West. They quote that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here you have a quotation, very well known. I made it the title of my first book, The New Pearl Harbor. In the document produced in the fall of 2000, 1 year before 9/11, by this Project for the New American Century, the document called Rebuilding America's Defenses, they're saying that this revolution in military affairs, this transformation they want to bring about, is going to be very expensive, and therefore it's going to be difficult, particularly after the Cold War is over, getting the money. Is Congress going to pony up all this money? And they say the transformation will probably go quite slowly, absent some catastrophic and catalyzing event,
which
such
becomes
as
then,
New Pearl Harbor.
Which becomes then the motive behind it.
Mm-hmm.
You would think that the 9/11 Commission, if it were an honest commission, after giving all those quotations from bin Laden and his group, would have given this quotation where it seemed like people who later became members of the Bush administration had said, another Pearl Harbor kind of event would be a great thing for our purposes.
Exactly.
I know there's a memo from an FAA employee named Laura Brown, and I know that you have spoken with this woman on the phone. What is the significance of this memo, and how was this handled in the report?
Yeah, she's rather the heroine of my book. whether she appreciates that or not, I don't know. But she talked to me on the phone for about an hour, and previous to that, she had written this memo. Well, this memo was a correction of impressions that had been left at one of the 9/11 hearings, in which the military gave the impression to the commission, and the commission was accepting it, that the FAA had not notified the military about these later flights, and Flight 77 in particular. And she points out that following standard procedures, as soon as a problem arose that morning, there's some debate as to when that was, but at least her latest time on it was 9:45. So, about the time that the World Trade Center attacks were happening, prior to that, the phone bridge or teleconference was established, and the FAA was in continual conversation with the military, with the Pentagon, after that point, and they were notifying them about all problematic flights, including, she specifically said, Flight 77.
So there's no excuse now, is there? Yeah. Now, David, the budget just came out, the 2005 budget from George Bush, and we know that he wants billions for the military, he wants billions more for Iraq, but something dawned upon me when I was reading your book was that a lot of this money that's quote-unquote earmarked for Iraq might not even be going there because it could be being funneled towards something called Vision for 2020 and also the U.S. National Security Space Management Organization. Is this money actually being used for something other than what they're saying it's being used for?
Well, we know they do shift money around. We know that, about $6 billion just recently turned up missing in money that was supposed to be used in Iraq. So that may be. We know that money that was supposed to go to Afghanistan went to Iraq. So there's simply no oversight the U.S. Space Command. Now, the reason this is important, and again, the 9/11 Commission doesn't give you a hint about this, is that what they want to do now is weaponize space. That's right. Different from militarizing space. We've already done that. We're already using space for military purposes. Mm-hmm. But to put actual weapons in space, laser cannons, maybe even nuclear weapons, the goal, these documents, this Vision 2020 document, state very explicitly the goal is global domination and that we would deny the use of space to others, perhaps even allies such as Germany and Japan and so on. Once we get space weaponized, these weapons could strike any part of the Earth almost immediately. But they say this is going to cost, some estimates put it at $1 trillion simply to get space weaponized in the first place.
So the war becomes very convenient.
And they want to deny other nations the right to even be in space. Is that correct?
That's their own statement, that they will deny the use of space to others. And see, once you get weapons on your satellites, then anybody else tries to put a satellite up, they can just be shot down before they can get established.
I can't let you get away without asking you if you've seen the Popular Mechanics article.
Yes, I have.
And what are your impressions?
Well, Jim Hoffman has published and put on his website a full-scale rebuttal.
Right.
And this is just the most irresponsible publication article you can imagine that Popular Mechanics put out.
Exactly.
It's purely a hit piece. It's either the author is either terribly ignorant or else deliberately untruthful, because he lists a bunch of what he calls 16 major points of the so-called conspiracy theorists. Well, hardly any of those are major points.
Right.
And almost everything that I list in my book as the major arguments in the cumulative argument in the New Pearl Harbor, all of those are ignored.
Yeah. Well, David, I got one more question for you, but first we're going to hold your books up one last time. The New Pearl Harbor, also the 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions. They can get them from Interlink Books, are also from Amazon.com. David, we want to thank you so much. And here's my closing question to you. How can the media, how can politicians, how can the military, how can those in law enforcement that know what the truth about this is, how can they look themselves in the mirror and how can they go to bed at night knowing what happened and they're not divulging the truth?
Well, that's a good question. But people, as we know from history and biography, do things they're not proud of when they're either afraid or they're richly rewarded financially.
Yeah.
Or both.
Yeah.
Carrot and stick.
Well, you did a wonderful job in this book. Everybody go out and get a copy of it. And in all honesty, I could only read this page or this book a few pages at a time because I got so disgusted that I'd have to put it down and then I'd pick it back up again. And
David, we're all indebted to you.
Well, thank you. And thank you for letting people know about the book. I think it's extremely important that Americans realize the 9/11 Commission report is really just a 567-page lie.
You're right. You're so right. Well, thank you for coming on Wing TV.
Yeah.
Tomorrow we're going to have Richard Stanley, who's going to talk about 9/11 and things beyond that. So tune in. Thank you for everybody for your kind comments on what we're doing.
Yeah.
And we'll see you tomorrow on Wing TV. Keep your eyes open, folks.
Have a good one.